So this is the fourth class on my 10 fields of Zen. And this class is on the third field of mindfulness, cultivating awareness every moment. So the 10 fields of Zen, which I created to try to give you a sense of the breadth of Zen practice and how it can permeate your life, include bodhicitta, or the mind that seeks the way, your kind of our aspiration for liberation, zazen, which we talked about last week, mindfulness. So next week we'll talk about dharma study, then precepts, and we study the precepts a lot every year. We have whole like 2.5 months we study precepts, so I think we'll really be discussing and hearing from one another about how the precepts have taught you. You know, how have they really been a tool for you to study the self and move toward awakening and liberation? Then we have opening your heart, learning the self, realization, bodhisattva service, and connecting with the ineffable. So we'll be continuing on with that study. All right. And for mindfulness, I wanted to start with sharing a little video with you that I thought was, I saw it once and then it really stuck with me. A little, very short video about mindfulness. So I will share sound and optimize for video. Hopefully this will work for you all.
You may have heard this word mindfulness. It's become something of a buzz phrase of late. I'm going to give you one simple, serviceable definition, which is this. Mindfulness is the ability to know what's happening in your head at any given moment without getting carried away by it. Imagine how useful this could be. Just as an example, driving down the road and somebody cuts you off in traffic. How do you normally react? I think most of us, we normally react by having a thought, which is, I'm pissed. And then what happens next? You immediately, habitually, reflexively inhabit that thought. You actually become pissed. There's no buffer between the stimulus and your reaction. With just a little bit of mindfulness, in that same situation, you might notice my chest is buzzing, my ears are turning red, I'm having a starburst of self-righteous thoughts, I'm getting angry. But you don't necessarily have to act on it and chase that person down the road, screaming at them with your kids in the back of the car, thinking you've gone nuts. Now, you might be thinking, don't I need to get angry sometimes? Aren't I justified? I would say yes, but probably not as much as you think. The proposition here is not that you should be rendered by mindfulness into some lifeless, non-judgmental blob. The proposition is that you should learn how to respond wisely to things that happen to you rather than just reacting blindly. And that, my friends, is a superpower. How do you get it? The way to get it is through meditation. I believe that meditation and mindfulness are the next big public health revolution. In the 1940s, if you told somebody you were going running, they would have said, "Who's chasing you?" But then what happened next? The scientists swooped in, they showed that physical exercise is really good for you, and now all of us do it, and if we don't, we feel guilty about it. And that's where I think we're headed with mindfulness and meditation. It's going to join the pantheon of no-brainers like brushing your teeth, eating well, and taking the meds your doctor prescribed for you. Let me just close by saying, mindfulness is not going to solve all of your problems. It's not going to render your life a nonstop parade of unicorns and rainbows. Nonetheless, this is a superpower and one that is accessible by you immediately.
So I just thought that was pretty right on for a YouTube video. So at some point, I think so, Paul, you're our host, we will go into breakout groups of about maybe 3-4 if it doesn't end up right. So mindfulness. I always get a little, I wrote a whole book on mindfulness, like a whole idiot's guide. And, you know, I've supposedly practiced mindfulness for all these years and all that, but I really like things to be, I don't know, clearly defined and easily understood. And mindfulness always seems a little bit, I think what it is we use the term in many different ways. So it can mean different things, and they're all useful, and we employ all of them. Fundamentally, it's paying attention, maintaining awareness, and that video was talking about inside, and that is certainly of critical importance, but especially in Zen, we're also talking about being mindful of what is happening outside and, you know, what we're doing. And part of it is paying attention, and part of it is remembering to pay attention. So actually, the sati, the word that is translated as mindfulness in original Buddhism, is more like remembering. And it's not just paying attention to anything, right? Because you could be paying attention to, something somebody did that pissed you off, and you could be just like paying a lot of attention to that. So really, it's attention to what's actually going on, as opposed to getting caught up in your inner narrative, right? Like that video said. And sometimes your inner narrative is a reaction to something that's happening or whatever, but sometimes we're just way like in our heads. You know, in general, most people are quite oblivious. And I mean, maybe we're a little less oblivious because we've done mindfulness and all that, but we're probably pretty oblivious too, you know? If you imagine, I don't know, you know, sitting in chairs waiting at a doctor's office, or, being on a city bus or something, how often do you like end up catching somebody's eyes and it's kind of like, they're right here, right? Like you actually just right there, recognize each other as being right there. It's just kind of like, okay, you might meet eyes, but then I'm thinking my stuff, you're thinking about your stuff, we're anticipating the future or the past, or we're, who knows? So we're often just very caught up in our internal mental universe and not noticing either what's going on around us or really noticing what is going on within us. There's a way that becoming mindful, becoming aware of something that is happening within us, within our mind and body, our emotions, is kind of it's an objective kind of thing, even though it's happening within, right? It's noticing and not being caught in it. So many of you are familiar with the teachings of the Buddha on mindfulness, and a classic sutra where he recommends being focused, practicing this ability to pay attention by focusing on the body in and of itself. That's a great way to begin. So this is something that as a great practice to start, to ground ourselves as we realize we've been caught up. And how does the monk do this? Breathing in long, he discerns, I am breathing in long. Or breathing out long, he discerns, I am breathing out long. Or further, when walking, the monk discerns, I am walking. When standing, discerns, I am standing. When sitting, I am sitting. When lying down, I'm lying down. then we become focused on feelings in and of themselves. And feelings in a Buddhist sense are just kind of like, dislike, and neutrality. Emotions are more elaborate than that. These are just our basic, like, So I am feeling a painful feeling, or I am feeling a pleasant feeling, or neither pleasant nor painful feeling. And then we start to pay attention to what is happening in the mind. When the mind has passion, we discern the mind has passion. When the mind is without passion, the mind is without passion. Or the mind is scattered, or the mind is dull, or the mind is, As soon as you notice something with mindfulness, you are not totally caught up in it. Even in the, if the emotions or the karma still play themselves out, we're not totally caught up. And I think many of us have experienced this, how it seems really counterintuitive. But when we can recognize, I am feeling depressed, that's like the first step to changing that course, right? As opposed to just we are within that depression and everything looks awful and we know everything's going to get worse. I'm feeling depressed. So there's just a little bit of dissociation from that, not in the negative sense, disidentification with it. And we don't try to be calmer. When we're practicing mindfulness in this way, we don't have that kind of agenda to fix everything right away. So it's, like the Buddha was saying, there is passion arising in the mind. He didn't say, you notice there's passion arising in the mind, so get rid of it right now. It's just noticing it. And this is the amazing miracle that the Buddha discovered, that really just through this process of acknowledging what's there and really starting to learn how to pay attention to it, to pay attention to how things arise and how they inevitably pass away. And it's like that very process of watching things arise and pass away, if we really stick with anger, for instance, which anger is like a few things, there are a few things with which we become so self-identified. There are certainly other really compelling, like anxiety and fear and stuff, that are very, can be very, very overpowering. But it's anger that, like, that's why we say in the precept against indulging anger, do not contrive reality for the self. Because that's like, that's what we start to do. It seems so real. And if we can watch that arise in a slightly, disidentified way, and then notice, like, I don't know, you go to bed angry and you wake up and you're like, where did it go? Right? All of a sudden that thing that is so real. And even just, that's why even postponing indulging anger can be so, such a potent thing. Because we don't keep on making it seem more real. And then it changes. It dissipates or changes. And it tells us that's not an inherently real thing the way we thought it was. So mindfulness in Zen is like, we do a whole lot more mindfulness than we do Zazen. even if you sit a lot, what percentage of your waking hours is Zazen? So mindfulness is really what we practice the rest of the time. This is a little different than like original Buddhism. He didn't have a separate kind of meditation. When monks were meditating, they were practicing mindfulness. They were practicing mindfulness of not just the body and feelings and stuff like that. They paid attention to the Dharma teachings, like the arising of dukkha and the passing away of dukkha and all that. So they had this.
But they were meditating.
While they were meditating. So, and they, you know, and that's what you would do if you were practicing with the Theravadan group. You know, we have this weird thing we call Zazen, Shikantaza, where we're just sitting and letting everything go and be. But mindfulness is what we do the rest of the time. Trying to maintain, I mean, ideally, all our waking hours, sometimes even into sleep, just an awareness of what is actually going on. Obviously, sometimes, you know, we watch TV or we get engaged in things. But even then, you know, periodically, we can just kind of come back to our body, being aware of how we're sitting, being aware of our breath. So there's always these like moments of mindfulness we can cultivate throughout our day. And sometimes mindfulness can feel a lot like the attitude of Zazen, right? Of just letting things be, of not commenting on them, not trying to figure them out. It's a very, and that's, you know, we might be doing a very simple task or something, washing dishes, or maybe we're walking in nature or something. We can be doing an activity where the attitude is the experience is feels a little bit just like kind of like walking or moving Zazen. But a lot of times what we're doing in our lives requires us to participate. We have to talk to people. We have to, you know, think about stuff. We have to get engaged in tasks that are more demanding. So it's always interesting to just kind of wonder what, you know, what is mindfulness as we are doing these things? I know, like, there's a way that the very effort to practice and be mindful for some of us can actually kind of, twist our heads in a knot, because we're trying to add something extra to simple activities. Like, you know, I aspired to be mindful, and so I would go for walks, and I would try to be mindful, and then I would be wondering if I was really being mindful, and I noticed that I wasn't really mindful, and I would try to be more mindful, and like, so now it is, so they said it's, one of the terms is like you're wearing a head on top of your head, right? You're adding a new dimension of like weird self-consciousness to what you're doing. You're trying to just be present. I don't know. It doesn't quite feel like this isn't how it's supposed to feel, is it? Now I've just complicated my walk. So there are ways we, maybe not everybody, but I certainly have gotten struggled with mindfulness about what it really is. So some of you will have been exposed on the podcast where I said, like, the way that I like to think about it is being undivided. So then it feels more of like, this feels more in harmony with the way that we sit Zazen, in that I'm not trying to fix anything or make anything happen. In a way, I'm just trying to let go of some of the extra stuff, right? So as I am driving or as I am doing my groceries or something like that, and when I remember, do I notice whether is half of me, like, you know, down that aisle, is half of me what I'm doing next? Or can I really just be doing this? So it really is, when we're working, we just work. We're laughing, we just laugh. When we're driving, we just drive. So there's a dedication to the task. And it's going to feel different. You know, planning a class, working on a spreadsheet, you know, counseling people, it's going to be a different experience than sitting Zazen or walking quietly in nature. It's just different. To do that wholeheartedly and undividedly is going to feel different. Maybe not as pleasant, who knows, but maybe it's fun. So, why don't we go into small groups for a little bit and we can hear back. So I was going to ask two questions. And so each person in the group can respond to these questions. Pretty simple. Are there activities you do or times where you specifically practice mindfulness? You know, do you like, okay, when I'm gardening, I'm going to, you know, not listen to music and I'm going to just try to really pay attention to the sensations in my hands? Or, you know, is there anything you do where you specifically practice mindfulness? And what is that? And then, are there activities or times when you find it very difficult to be mindful? So those two questions. And let's come back around day 37 Pacific time. All right.
How many
groups? Well, that was fun. So, I mean, we had fun. So I'm assuming everybody did. So I am curious in particular. Oh, I'm not loud because I don't have the microphone on. In particular, with the time that we have remaining, it might be nice to be talking about challenges to mindfulness. So maybe we can have a couple examples that came up in the groups of when mindfulness feels particularly challenging, and then maybe we can talk a little bit about how to work with that. Anybody have an example they want to bring up?
The times that I have the most difficulty handling mindfulness is when I'm going along being like, all right, this is my day. I'm mindful. I'm aware of what's going inside of me and outside of me and the interplay between the two. But then when I recognize a person treating another person poorly in that moment, my default mode is I'm angry, accusations, and then I've lost it. And I forget that those two people are also having the same experience. And like I said in the group, like, we are definitely accountable for our actions, but there's a part of our action too that is somewhat out of control. This is a big process and there are a lot of things happening, and It's delusional to think any of us are in total control of any of our actions. Our actions are just kind of a result of a whole bunch of circumstances that happened before and a chain of events, you know. But yes, anger when people treat each other poorly is when I lose my sense of objectivity.
And when have you had luck, you know?
Well, that was that story. There was that story I told not too long ago when I saw these people crossing the street and letting their dog run around without a leash in front of the Portland Public Library, and their dog shit all over the ground, and they chose not to do anything about it, and they just walked away. And instead of getting mad, I like immediately stopped and was like, it clicked, and I was like, oh, well, you know, there are a lot worse things happening in the world, and I don't know why I should let that disturb me. I'll just go get a doggy bag from my house and pick that shit up myself, and it's fine. If I have such a problem with it, then I should probably just fix the problem, you know? There was another time, too, actually recently, where a guy was throwing out trash in like one of the city trash cans, but someone had yanked out the trash can from it and the door was open, the trash can was flipped over, and he just threw it in there. And like, I was like, hey, and I looked at him and I like was making eye contact, and I lifted up the trash can and I grabbed his trash and I put it in the trash can and I put the trash can inside the bin. And I was like, you know, if you're going to come across a problem and not fix it, and especially because you're doing something that you're not supposed to be doing, that seems kind of silly, don't you think? And then I just walked away. And he didn't say anything to me, and he didn't seem pissed off, and he just watched me and was like, And I was like, well, I hope that goes. I wasn't trying to be an asshole, but it's just like, if you encounter something that's wrong, I'm always shocked by how many people will just look at it and not do anything about it. And it's like 2 seconds to be like, boom, All right, there you go. Next thing. Okay, did that really inconvenience me? I don't think that it did. It was fine. Just a problem that needed to be fixed or something that was out of place, so put it back into place. I like order. I do. I like order. Maybe a little bit too much. Maybe order and anger sometimes stand in my way. I don't know. But yes, that's my gist. It's good to be back. Hello, everyone.
John.
Yeah, you know, some things are easy to do, like everyone did chores, walking the dog, that kind of stuff. It did zazen. Things that were hard, like watching movies or talking to people, social situations. One of the things that came up in both columns was driving. And the reason it's kind of hard sometimes to focus driving is because it's a mindless task and you got so much to do after. So those interim tasks where you've got something to do after is kind of hard to stay focused when you're thinking about the next thing. Then one other thing came up. There's things that you are very attentive to. Like let's say you'd studied for a SAT test for whatever. Now you got a time test and you sit down and you're going to do your problems. If you sat there the whole time while you're doing the test saying, not just doing the problems, but I'm doing the problems, I mean, it would be distracting. In other words, so in some cases, mindfulness could actually be distracting, it seems like. So I'll take my answer off the air.
It does. I mean, I will confess that at times in my practice, I don't look at it like this anymore. But really, if you absorb the teachings of original Buddhism, if you absorb what the Buddha actually said, it's very. And actually, I go out to Great Bao Zen Monastery, and Chosen is like the queen of mindfulness. And I mean, she talks about it and encourages it, and I think she just walks around in like a state of constant mindfulness.
I love so.
And so I have felt like. Okay, you know, I managed to be. I have a very active mind. I'm constant. It's very creative. I'm constantly thinking about the stuff I'm gonna do, the stuff I want to do, and I feel like I, you know, okay, I can make it. I can concentrate on this simple, boring task. You know, for like I don't know, and I really felt like I was mindful for maybe 5% of my waking hours, and the rest was like a waste. And it felt very, very discouraging. And I don't know. So I stopped thinking of it that way, stopped thinking of it as being just well, what okay, so one of the things that was most helpful was what I realized was I was getting identified with one of the skandhas. So we are composed of, you know, in the Buddhist view, like of form, our body, sensations, perceptions, formations, and consciousness. We are none of those things. We are a heap of those things. They are components of who we are, but there is no self to be found in any of them. But it's easy when we hear these mindfulness teachings to think consciousness is the self. And kind of self-consciousness is the self, right? So, kind of what I want to do is walk around all day thinking, here I am, you know, here I am doing, and now I'm being mindful, and now I'm sitting zazen, and which is kind of just insane, right? That is simply an over-identification with one part of who we are. So, like you were saying, like if we sat through our SAT test, I am taking a test. I am taking a test. Like, that's not how we're supposed to function. So it really does raise the question, which still I ask myself, like, what is it to be mindful? You know, especially if you have like a demanding job that requires lots of interaction with people, what is it to be mindful as you do that? I think we kind of know, but it's not so easy to put your finger on, right? Yuli.
So when we were talking, one of the things that I'm most mindful with is my commute. And I didn't think about the driving part, but when I was commuting to OHSU, I always turned off my I didn't I never turned off my phone, but I just put it away and I didn't look. And I really tried to enjoy the train ride and the view from the train and then from the bus. And but I was thinking also that when I drive, even though I'm listening to podcasts or something, when I drive, I'm very mindful. I'm all kinds of constantly looking, though sometimes I'm less mindful and I get lost. But sometimes I enjoy getting lost because at one point I was driving to a retreat in Estacada and I got lost, and it was so beautiful where I went. It was like not where I was supposed to be, but it was beautiful. And I thought, oh, this is really nice being lost. So it's like I don't get angry when I get lost. I don't, it's like driving is not super enjoyable, but I never get any road rage. But one of the things that came up for both Carol and I is that we struggle. The mornings are, I mean, I struggle with ADHD, so the mornings are horrid, which is why Zazen is hard for me in the mornings because I'm always running late. And it's not like when I'm not doing Zazen, I'm doing anything useful because I'm so distracted. I'm all over the place in the morning. So I don't know why I can't just focus all of that disorganization into one thing. You know what I'm saying? I really struggle with that, and it's really hard to figure out why. And I think maybe it's the frenzy of the morning and trying to get out and getting so distracted. But if I could just focus my energy in one thing and not a million things, I think my life would be a little bit easier, I think. But anyways, that was it.
Ruth Ann may have had her hand up.
Oh,
Ruth.
I think if we're in a situation where we want and need to pay attention, maybe a professional meeting, and also if somebody is asking us a question that where we want to give our full ability, capacity to answer in a good, polite, professional way, I think we become mindful right away. It's like if you're suddenly in the ER, you're paying attention, you're mindful. We're all capable of it, but I just see the sitting as a chance to practice in our own familiar, comfortable way. So when we need it, and somebody perhaps asks us a question, or we're in a situation we wish we weren't, it comes to the fore that we can be there in our full selves. Because, I remember hearing, I guess, even in high school, none of us are ever using our full potential. So when we can, it's magic because it's like a part of us that's not asleep.
I love that pointing out that this is a natural capacity we have, right? So it's really a matter of can we employ that same ability when it's not something of natural interest, not something we like, or it's not something entertaining, or it's not something scary, or anything. It's just so it's really like paying attention to life so we can act more in harmony with it. We can see what's really going on. We can appreciate it. Yeshe
I don't define mindfulness as a mental or state of consciousness. For me, mindfulness is a sensory experience. I'm more living in sensations rather than thinking or observing myself. And since you gave an examples of, or John did, of taking tests, I'll use that as an example. When I was in vet school, we had oodles of exams, and I had a lot of test anxiety. Typically what would happen, I would start the test and 99% of the answers I put down because my anxiety would be wrong. And so I would always just make sure I'd go back and I'd just change all my answers and I'd get a really good grade. But I couldn't just, my anxiety would be so high to begin with, it was just not good. But then as I started practicing more and more meditation, I would just, for lack of a better word, because I don't know what it is, I would just go into prayer. So that when I took an exam, I would be in flow, and it was just a complete surrender. And I remember even saying, I will put down whatever you guide me to put down. That would happen. I would not only get perfect scores, but I would get all the bonus right, and I wouldn't have to go back and change anything. To me, that's more what mindfulness is about. It's an experience of being in flow, and it's in the senses, it's in the body. At least for me, it's not a mental observation. So there's not a consciousness about it, it's a beingness. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Very much. Yeah, it's definitely rooted in the body. You know, the body is right here, right now. The body is where things are actually happening.
It's more than that. It's not even that I'm aware of, now I'm aware that I'm in the body. It's as if there's this pseudo boundary of skin between me and supposedly what's out. It's not really there. There's just this beingness. Anyway,
thanks.
She must be a water sign.
So I figured I would also mention, so related to mindfulness, you know, there's this kind of inwardly turned mindfulness of our own behaviors and emotions, and over time, that mindfulness isn't just something that's useful in the moment, which it is, but over time we can learn about ourselves this way. This is the tool that we use to become more familiar with ourselves and our own karma, noticing, you know, for instance, maybe there's somebody that we find it difficult to relate to. And all we usually think about is just, oh, this person and why they might be a problem. But if we start paying more attention in terms of mindfulness, we'll notice, like, you know, what is it exactly that they do that causes a reaction? And, you know, where do you feel that reaction? Do you notice any other times when that reaction comes about? What kind of thoughts come up when that happens? You know, like, you can start to see more closely what is actually unfolding. And that's what gives us that opportunity over time to maybe make some different choices. So this is a very important part of our practice, is doing that. But I like to think that all of the 10 fields of practice, all of our tools can be viewed in a purposeful way and a purposeless way. So there's a sense in which mindfulness can serve a purpose, right? And allows us to see our karma, allows us to work with our habits. It allows us to be more present and still, all of this good stuff. But then there's also just, being mindful for its own sake, right? To be alert and notice what's going on in your actual life instead of just being, caught up in the dream of thought. And one of the ways that we really enact this is what I call Nyoho practice. And that is, Nyoho is a term that, as far as I know, in Japan is used primarily in association with clothing, with a sewing tradition. But it's a sense of it's done very, very mindfully and carefully. So I use it as a little more expansive way to mean all of this Zen stuff that we do to really help us stay mindful, particular ways that we do things, particular rituals that we have. And they all center around treating the things around us with care and gratitude, and treating the people around us with care and gratitude. So in the midst of, a really formal Zen monastery, there are just countless rules, if you will, modes of behavior that are meant to be just, I mean, you gotta stay on your toes if you're gonna keep all of these rules. You notice, as one of my favorite ones is, we have these communal meals that we eat together at retreat. And the teacher, when they're eating, should be noticing where everyone else is in their meal. And they should eat at a pace so that they finish just before the last person to finish. So they don't like, they're not going to be the last one. I mean, so like make everybody drag it out. But they should neither should they, wolf their food down. And there's actually monastic rules that say don't eat like that and then sit like this. And like look around at everybody like I'm bored now, right? There's, putting our shoes straight so that when somebody comes into the zendo, it looks like everything is cared for, right? Noticing, I mean, this is something that oftentimes people are very, very focused on their own agenda and don't notice, for instance, okay, we make a circle of chairs and they won't notice, oh, somebody else came into the room now and there's no room for their chair in the circle. Right. But a lot of times people will just be absorbed in their own stuff, looking at their phones or whatever, instead of really noticing, how do your activities impact other people? Is there a way that you can take up less space? Is there, now that I have, older parents, they wryly observe that apparently it is not a thing to give up your seat on public transit to an older person anymore. They'll just be standing there, hanging on the handholds while there's just, young people enjoying the seats. So, that's like, but they probably didn't, it's probably not the kids, like, I don't mean that. Most of it's just not noticing. So, yeah, we have many different ways to practice Nyoho that we learn when we're in community. And Greg's book, Cloud Formations, Describing Your Practice, has other kinds of suggestions for how to bring that practice into your life. So I will leave it there. We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, All honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. Thank you for being here.
Bye, everyone.